The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. It is Monday, and we're getting ready to go on tour. Stu and I are actually working late tonight, which is, well, I mean, it's 1:15 this afternoon, on the tour that starts this week.
I'm only available till 1, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. Well, that's when we were supposed to start. I figured it 15 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, now
it's going to be a good show. It's going to be a good show. It starts actually in Richmond, Virginia. Then we are in Hershey, Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh on Saturday. Something really special happening in Pittsburgh. In fact, all of the proceeds, I'm going to donate all of the night's earnings to the Jewish community that has been so hard hit. And then on Sunday, we're going to Cleveland, Ohio. So it's the week before the election, and actually the election's still going on right now. People are voting, but we have a lot to say and a lot of fun, and some things that I think you're going to be able to take away for your kids. You can bring your kids. It's age appropriate for them as well. All right, today's podcast. By the way, get your tickets at glenbeck.com/tour. Today's podcast.
Look into what happened in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
quite a bit. The media reaction to it. What are the right things to think about in a moment like this? Because it's certainly not what we're doing.
Yeah, there was a poll out. We also hit this that, you know, America's ready for a third party, which I'm not sure I believe, and that we don't agree on values. But all the things listed were not values. None of those were values or principles. They were all politics. So we wanted to say, all right, how do we look at these things? How do we look at the issues of the day and American values? Are the answers even worth finding? Is America and the West worth saving?
That's a big question, apparently. We also go into some of the election stuff that's coming up, the latest polls. What are they showing us as we get closer to the actual election day?
And it looks like it's starting to shift back again towards the Democrats just a little bit. But that's all explained on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Monday, October 29th.
Brickhouse Nutrition is a great company because they decided, you know what? Your mom told you that you're supposed to eat your vegetables, and we know you're not going to do it because you're a guy and you're just going to, you know, jam.
I know, I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
Yeah, everybody does. But you don't have to hate it anymore because of Field of Greens. Field of Greens, they give it to you. It's this nice little, like, I don't know how to explain it exactly, but you take a couple spoonfuls, you put it into a smoothie or whatever you're eating or drinking, get you all the nutrients that you need with your vegetables, and you don't have to actually eat the vegetables.
I love this.
It's a hall pass.
I love this.
A vegetable hall pass.
Yes.
Go to brickhouseglenn.com. You're going to use the promo code Glenn. Get 15% off your first order. It's brickhouseglenn.com. Field of Greens they have there. Also have Dawn to Dusk, which I think you'll like as well. If you have some problems with energy later in the day, like I kind of sometimes do, brickhouseglenn.com. The promo code is Glenn for 15% off. Back with the radio show in just a moment.
Glenn Beck.
I want to start with a story of a guy named Gregory. He was a musician. He always considered himself a musician first, a soldier second. He was always the brunt of the jokes in his combat unit. But no one was laughing that day. Gregory's unit was in the Soviet Red Army, and he had done the unthinkable while at the Battle of Stalingrad. Battle of Stalingrad was one of the worst battles of all time. But they had survived. Now, that was really not only his story, but the eternal and tragic story of his entire people. Gregory was a Jew, and survival was his birthright. This war, some were calling it the Second Great War to end all wars, was no different. It was just one more calamity that he and his people would have to survive. Gregory's unit had pushed through the Ukraine. They were now on the heartland of the Third Reich. The sea of German tanks were all scattered before them. Gregory dove into a ditch at the last second while a barrage of tank and mortar fire came screaming through the air. It was then that he noticed something. Although terrifying as the sound of the incoming artillery fire was, it also resembled something extraordinary to him. Music. Gregory shifted his thinking from soldier to musician, and the incoming rounds were transformed within his mind to notes and stanzas on a sheet of carefully conducted music. It had order, it had purpose, and more importantly, it became predictable for him. It was his musical mind that allowed both he and his unit to tell where the German rounds were going to strike. That's why he and his unit survived. He would go on to Germany. He participated in the liberation of the Nazi concentration camps. The people behind the barbed wire were just like him. They were all Jews. While they would survive, their persecution was still not over. The Jews caught behind the Iron Curtain now lived in a state of fear and denial under Stalin. And Stalin required all Jews to register as a Jew on their state papers. So every time Gregory now applied for a job or looked for a place to live, an employer or a housing official would take one look at his papers and turn him down because of the three letters on his papers, J-E-W. Same thing was happening under Hitler. In fact, Hitler, after the Night of Broken Glass, or Kristallnacht, as it's become known as, he said that all male Jews needed to now use the first name Israel, and all women needed to use the first name Rachel. Why? Because the state declared it. They did it because they could. Now, Gregory, after liberating Jews from that nightmare, found himself in another nightmare in the Soviet Union. They couldn't eat kosher. They couldn't become rabbis. They couldn't live as God had commanded them. For them, this is the story of the Jewish people. Just survive. That's why the nation of Israel exists. If people don't understand, that is why. No one ever wants them. No one ever stands for them. They're always the last in line. And so the world decided, let them have this scrap of land they say was theirs because of the Bible. Let them have it. It's uninhabitable. It's just nothing but a desert. There's no oil. There's nothing there. Just give it to them. And the Jews happily took it, restored to their homeland as the only nation on earth to be wiped off the face of the map and then to be restored 2,000 years later, exactly as foretold. Israel exists because no one seems to want them. Israel exists because they have a right to live. So let me go back to Russia and our musical friend. In 1989, 40 years after the Battle of Stalingrad, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society was helping Jews get out of the Soviet Union and go to Israel and to the United States. And they provided lawyers, money to find homes, food, even language classes to help them assimilate in their new country. For the first time ever, Gregory and the rest of the Jews that he had known, that had survived both Hitler and Stalin, could concentrate on something more than just surviving. They had a right to pursue their happiness. They could practice their faith. They could be proud of who they were. They could finally live. The group that saved him is the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. It's the oldest refugee assistance organization in the world. Let me say that again. It's the oldest refugee assistance organization in the world. It was established in the 1800s, and they're responsible for assisting thousands and thousands of Jews. And a few years ago, they opened up their services not just to Jews, but people of all faiths that are persecuted and need to be rescued. Their current CEO was asked recently why they decided to do it. His answer couldn't be more perfect. We no longer help refugees because they're Jewish. We help refugees because we are Jewish. The reason why I'm telling you this story is this is the organization that a madman went into Philadelphia to try to stop. This is the organization that was attacked on Saturday morning at the Tree of Life Synagogue. Story never seems to end. 11 people were killed in the deadliest attack on Jews in our country's history. Stories like Gregory filled the synagogue that Saturday morning. The horrors they collectively endured, unimaginable to most people. And yet here we are, again, with a group of people who now have to concentrate just on one thing: survive. Anti-Semitism is evil. Anti-Semitism is a disease. Anti-Semitism is as old as the world. From the moment God said, "I will make you my people," there has been anti-Semitism. And it is on the rise, as it always is in times of nationalism and socialism. Every time the Jew is the canary in the coal mine, they are always the first. And if the world doesn't pay attention at that point, it's washed in blood. If the world decides they need to come for the Jews, I proudly declare myself a Jew. The world makes promises all the time, and they don't ever intend on keeping them. But I do. We said never forget. I've told you, you are the audience that will in the end restore the republic, save the republic. And it's not going to be through violence. The world is going to become more and more violent. We must be a unique and peculiar people, because the vast majority of Americans know this is not who we are. This is not who we want to be. And we will stand shoulder to shoulder with our Jewish brothers and sisters. We will stand shoulder to shoulder with our Christian brothers and sisters in the Middle East. We will stand shoulder to shoulder with a Muslim that is being rounded up by the Chinese. The cycle of hate has begun again. And it's not Donald Trump, and it's not Barack Obama. It's a cycle that has been running since the beginning of time. And the world always acts the same way, because it always comes in a time of chaos. It always comes in a time of fear. It always comes in a we cycle, when forget the individual. It's what's best for all of society. It's why our founders came here in the first place. It's why our founders defended the Jews. We're a different country. We're a different people. We're not better than the rest of the world. We just see things differently. And if we don't Shame on us. Our pilgrims came here thinking that they were completing the journey from the Red Sea. Our first great seal of the United States was the pillar of fire and Pharaoh's horses and the parting of the Red Sea. I don't want to just survive. I don't want to do something to earn a living. I want to live. FDR said, "This generation has a rendezvous with destiny." I echo those words. Our generation must be the generation that breaks this cycle. There is no one else in the world who will do it. Who will stand against this onslaught? Who will stand against the hatred and the nationalism and the collectivism? The extermination of people that just aren't good enough. We are headed that way. We are headed that way. Once you cannot talk to your neighbors, once the other side has nothing to offer, you have to eliminate them. Because they're the devil. They're the devil, and you cannot deal with the devil. Will the 60 to 80% of this country stand up? They never, ever have. They never, ever have. It was 20%. 20% for the American Revolution. Most people stood on the sidelines. There was another 20% that wanted the king. We have a rendezvous with destiny. Let us be the generation that finally breaks this chain.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
So the reason why we brought Pat in this morning is because, he's doing more on trivia. And more on trivia is always a laugh. And so we wanted to find out how it went on Friday, Pat.
It's a chance to get away from the discourse for a little while, for like an hour a week.
And just be mean to people.
Yeah, and just be mean to people. Find out how dumb they are. It's great.
That's not the scientific justification.
So on Fridays on the Pat Gray podcast, the Pat Gray mm-hmm. Unleashed podcast, and on the radio and television network, he does more on trivia. And we have just a taste of how things worked out. Mm-hmm. Calling convenience stores and asking them, pretty obvious questions.
Brianna, hi.
Hi.
Hey.
We're going to ask you four quick questions. If you don't know the answer, just take a guess and you can't ask anybody for help, okay?
All right.
Okay. What does D.C. stand for, as in Washington, D.C.?
That's tough.
Something about batteries.
I know.
It's almost impossible. Nobody's ever gotten that right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It stands for douches of Congress.
Really?
Right off the top of your tongue, wasn't it?
Yeah, a lot of people didn't.
Yeah.
Question number two. How many British colonies in America were there in 1776?
22.
Right.
Oh. So close.
So close. It was 21 because Rhode Island wasn't a thing yet.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah,
I know.
I wanted to give it to you, but they wanted an exact number. All right. Question number three. What animal do hamburgers come from?
Cow.
Thank you.
Hey.
You got cows.
Thank you.
Yes. Thought it was your credit.
Some of the hamburgers from cows. Others come from gerbils. But
yeah,
we're going to give it to you anyway.
Because
I think it's about a 50-50 split, cows and gerbils. All right. Question number four. Brianna, what is socialism?
Socialism?
Yeah, socialism. No one ever knows.
Community.
It's what?
Communication.
Right. Yes, it's right. Close. That's right. Close.
Communication.
Oh, you're not going to give it to her? No, I can't give it to her.
Oh, it's a specific kind on InstaChat. It's a. That's,
oh, wow.
Yeah, we're looking for the specific.
See, Brianna, you live in California. You're actually living socialism as we speak.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you're
right.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Right.
And you thought you were depressed about the country before we played that call. More on trivia. You can hear it with Pat Gray Unleashed.
Every Friday.
Every Friday on the Blaze Radio and TV Network.
Do we ask what the season record is?
6-2.
Not bad.
Yeah, it's
not
pretty
bad.
Good. Yeah. It's pretty good. We barely lost on the Packers.
Oh,
they had Packers against the Rams. It's like a 2-point loss on that one. Mm,
they had that game, too.
Yeah, they did.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you very much, Pat.
Thank you.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program, and we really want to thank you for listening.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Home Title Lock.
Love Home Title Lock. I have Home Title Lock. Stu has Home Title Lock. Mm-hmm. Pat has it.
45
seconds. We all put it in with our houses because we are absolutely convinced this is the crime of the future. And you could get nailed without even knowing it and lose your house, lose everything.
And it used to be basically impossible to protect yourself against it.
Right.
Until Home Title Lock came around.
Thieves now can take your house, take your title, and you don't even know it. Especially if you have older parents, make sure you go to Home Title Lock and find out how you can protect your home.
It's at HomeTitleLock.com. Go there. See if you're already a victim. They have a $100 scan that is absolutely free if you sign up. Check it out. HomeTitleLock.com. It's HomeTitleLock.com.
Do it. Do it, do it, do it. Rest in peace. Artistic freedom. Rest in peace, comedy. The leeching politically correct brigade have once again gotten their way. The Simpsons, a show that, let's be honest, hardly anyone even watches anymore, has surrendered to the unwavering demands of a small group of PC babies who have screamed and wailed and moaned that Apu character is culturally insensitive. They've won. A few weeks ago, South Park had an episode about it. Two PC parents give birth to five PC babies, and the PC babies throw a tantrum anytime somebody offends them, and the tantrums don't stop until the babies get exactly what they want, resulting in the people of South Park having to banish one of their oldest, most offensive characters, and they send him to The Simpsons. Yes, that cesspool of racism and hatred. Yes, we live in a world where a group of coddled, whiny people have determined that The Simpsons is hateful. The frickin' Simpsons. The same group that when people said, I don't know if Bart is a good role model, they told us to shut up. Now they find it offensive. I mean, who's next? Ned Flanders? That white supremacist cisgender man, symbol of the patriarchy? No, because that's making fun of him, so he'll stay. Mo, the bartender? Why is he taking the job of a minority woman transgender? Where's the diversity here? Because in the world of PC babies, and with every small surrender like this one, the world becomes theirs. Just a little bit more. And it's the way they want comedy. Comedy should adhere to the cultural sensitivity, to the rigorous standards of postmodern social doctrine. Comedy is not answering to the people, it's answering to a group of postmodernist crybabies. What are we doing? In a few weeks' time, they'll be demanding that the show now feature more racial diversity, more transgender characters, fewer white or actually yellow characters, fewer police, more professors. The plot lines will take subjects like Marxism, veganism, toxic masculinity, all into consideration. Oh, I'm sure. And cultural appropriation? Oh, the idea that got us into this mess to begin with. The show will become Lisa. Well, not Lisa, because even Lisa, who's a stereotype of the annoying PC kid who ruins the fun for everyone, even Lisa isn't PC enough. It's not going to be The Simpsons at all. The Simpsons, they should all just quit. But I will tell you, if they don't, it'll be the most culturally sensitive, most forward-thinking TV show ever made. It'll be the crowning achievement of the social justice movement. And not one single moment of it will be enjoyable, funny, or watched.
I'm glad you brought up the Apu thing, by the way, on The Simpsons. Did you see the reaction from the people who started this movement, who did this, you know, documentary, the problem with Apu or whatever, in the article, where they, you know, Simpsons are getting rid of this character, reportedly. We'll see if that actually happens. It seems like it is. And their reaction was, oh, we didn't want him to get rid of the character. So now they're complaining about the fact that their little movie got this character removed from the show. Now they're complaining about it. Oh, we just wanted him to be... I mean, basically what they're saying is, no, we don't want you to get rid of him. We just wanted to write everything that he says. Well, I mean, that's not something The Simpsons signed on for.
Yeah.
You're not a writer.
No, sorry.
That's unbelievable.
Crazy.
And this is a great lesson for everyone who tries to please. Say Megyn Kelly, I think, same type of thing, right? Mm-hmm. You can't, no matter what you say, they're never going to be pleased. The people who come after you for these nonsensical PC issues will never be pleased, no matter what you give them, no matter what apology you say, no matter how sincere it is, no matter... They're not asking you to remove Apu. They're not asking you to change. They're asking for something that you can't possibly give them. And the earlier you realize that, the better.
Let me change the subject to enough is enough. When, America, will enough be enough? New polls. Americans fed up, crave unity amid violence. Now, this one should terrify you, because 57% now say they want a third party. They want unity. That number is even higher. But I'm not sure people actually mean this. I'm not sure what unity even means. They say that we no longer really agree on the core values of our country, which I think is actually true. We don't agree on core values. But what are those core values? Anybody know? What are the values that brought it? What are the things that we're actually arguing about now? Way things are going in the United States, 25% are satisfied, 58% dissatisfied. The state of politics, 9% satisfied, 77% dissatisfied. 13% are like, duh. Percentage that say Americans are united and agreement about the most important values, 15%. 15% of us say we're united on the most important values. My question is, what are those values? Sincerely, what are we fighting for? Are we fighting for lower taxes? Here's what the survey shows, where we divide on our quote most important values. Politics in this country. Is politics a value? Moral ethics in our country. Is that a value? Race relations. Gap between rich and poor. The state of the news media. The way things are going in the U.S. The environment. The way things are going in your state. Rights for LGBT. Status of religion. Homeland security. With an exception of a couple, those aren't values. Those are issues. That's a political campaign. And perhaps that's what we're missing. See, I firmly believe, and I wrote this in the book Addicted to Outrage, we have a few things we have to decide. We have to decide, one, is the Western world worth saving? Is freedom, as our founders saw it, is it worth saving? Yes or no? And I don't want you just to, you know, jump off and, yeah, absolutely. Why? Why? Why is it worth saving? Who can articulate this? Why is it worth saving? How has it changed the world? In specifics, who can make that case among us? Who's making that case to their kids at dinner at night? In specifics. Is America a good place or a bad place? We have to decide. Because half of the country says it's a great place. Half of the country says, and I don't even know if these numbers are accurate in half. I doubt they are half. But let's just say half the country says it's a bad place. Half the country says it's a good place. Which are we? Sincerely, which are we? We have to choose, don't we? Because it's a binary choice, isn't it? We're good or bad, right? It's a binary choice. You have to choose one. No. No, you don't. It's not a binary choice. The answer is we're both. We're both. We've been both bad and good. We've had really good intentions, and the pathway to hell is paved in good intentions, and we have great intentions now. On both sides, we have great intentions. What are we going to do with those intentions? Because you rarely live up to them. Have you heard anyone actually make the case for America? And not just in red, white, and blue flag-waving terms, but why is America important? Why is the Constitution worth fighting for? Because if we don't know, let's just get on with it, man. Let's just move on. We cannot sit here and argue about the greatest issues of our time. We don't have our basic, I want to make sure I have this right, our basic essential values in line. Like climate change? You can say one of our values is how do we treat each other and how do we treat the earth? Okay, that's a value. That's not climate change. Climate change comes off of that value in principle. Climate change is okay. Is there a problem? Is there a problem? Well, I'm sorry, but the science is not settled. The climate is constantly changing. It always has. That's why we had the Ice Age. Where were the SUVs for the Ice Age? It always changes. Now, can we do things that can affect the climate? I don't know. Some people say we can. Some people say we can't. The evidence is spotty at best, and you can't trust the evidence that is there because we have too much evidence of collusion and coercion in the scientific field. You give me clean-cut studies? Okay. But that's not even what we're arguing about. We're arguing about what to do about it. See, they keep making about, you know, whether it's happening or not. I'm willing to give you the benefit of the doubt. I'm willing to say, okay, it's happening. All right, it's happening. What do you want to do about it? Well, the solutions are insane. The solutions don't work. Now, that is a political discussion. That is a political discussion. You know where our values come in? On that particular discussion, when someone says the science is settled, shut up. That's the violation of our values. When people sit down at the table and say, look, I care about the environment. I really do. I disagree with the science. And here are the people on my side that are showing you that this is coercion. This is collusion. And that your system, that you're touting is nothing more than a political system.
and it doesn't work. That's a political discussion. Those are the things we should have. What brings us together at the end are the values. We both care about the earth. Who doesn't care about the earth? Sincerely, who doesn't care about the earth? And I'm tired of being lectured by people who will go and protest and leave a sea of garbage behind them for others to keep and clean up. I'm sick of it. Don't tell me you care about the environment and then after a protest, everything is nothing but litter. You either care about it or you don't. Words don't mean anything anymore. Only actions do. Don't tell me what you believe. Show me what you believe. By doing the tough thing. And you know what the tough thing is right now? The tough thing is not saying something that's pleasing to your crowd. The tough thing is to say the things your crowd doesn't want to hear, but are right and no one is saying them. That takes courage. That takes conviction. That takes honesty. That takes compassion. That takes empathy. Those are values. So what are our values? How do we find them? Are they even worth finding? That question has to be answered first.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program, and don't forget, rate us on iTunes.
My Patriot Supply. When an emergency strikes, what is your first impulse? Your answer is to run to the grocery store, right? You hear a snowstorm, gotta run to the grocery, gotta get the grocery. How do you avoid it? It's really simple. You use today to make a plan. There is time to prepare for a hurricane, earthquake, blizzard, social unrest. The practical place to start is just by storing up some food in your home. Now, I use My Patriot Supply for food storage. I have for a very long time. If you don't have an emergency food supply, it's really... If you've listened to me for any given time, this is the time that we've talked about. This is the beginning of it. This is it. What I've talked to you about coming our way, we're here now. So if you've ever believed in any of that, now is the time to prepare. A two-week food kit that comes in a rugged tote so you can grab and go. This week, it's only $75 when you go to preparewithglenn.com or call 1-800-200-7163. It includes breakfast, lunch, dinner, up to 25 years in storage. You can order now, prepare yourself and your family, and then let it go. 800-200-7163 or preparewithglenn.com. It is the Western way of life. We're saving. Is it good? Is it nothing but a bunch of cisgender males, white Europeans that have oppressed people? Is that all it is? Can I ask you, Stu, when do you think World War II officially started? When did it really start?
So not our involvement in it.
Yeah, not our involvement.
Oh, God. I mean, the date I'm not going to get right.
Yeah, but... I know. Just give me an event.
God, that's a tough one.
Would you say Germany invades Poland or, you know, breaks the treaty with, you know,
yeah, I mean,
Chamberlain or
The
Berlin Treaty?
Because you're talking events that lead into other events. I mean, okay. You could go a million different places in that area.
I'll give you one. How about when Japan invaded China? Happened in 37? If you live on that side of the earth,
yeah,
you think World War II started then. Japan invaded China, Manchuria. And they said the only problem with Manchuria is all the Manchurians. Mm. Well, that sounds familiar. And so they invaded and they started a mass slaughter. All of the, you know, the bad bombings of civilians, that happened years before we were doing it or the Germans were doing it. It started in 37. In China,
with the Japanese. Well, where was the white man? Now, you know where the white man was? You know how history reflects this now? America didn't say anything at the time. America didn't step up to the plate and stop the slaughter in China. So wait a minute. Hold it just a second. So are we supposed to get involved in everything, or are we not supposed to be involved in everything? When we get involved, you blame us for getting involved and saying we're trying to jam our stuff down everybody's throat. When we don't show up, you blame us for not showing up. Either way, according to you, we violated, quote, our values. What are our values? Well, our values used to be, we are enemy of no one, friend all. Now that gets a little dicey. Gets really dicey. Didn't get dicey, apparently, when the Japanese invaded China. Yeah, that's because they only care about Europe. No, actually, no. We couldn't fight on all of the fronts. We had to choose. We didn't even want to go save Europe. America didn't even want to go into that war. Well, how could you? Oh my gosh, how could you? It's Europe. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. We're supposed to go save the white patriarchy? Wait a minute. We're to blame for all of that because we didn't go in and save the white hierarchy? I thought you just said that was bad and should be destroyed.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Allison in Kentucky, thanks for holding. You're on the Glenn Beck program.
Good morning, Glenn. It's so difficult to hear you struggling this morning. But maybe I can give you and some of the longtime listeners some advice.
Okay. I'm not really struggling. Well, I don't know.
Look, I've been a subscriber to this network since it was GBTV. We hear it in your voice when you're struggling a bit more than usual.
Okay.
But my advice is make it tangible. Because there's so many of us that tune in every day and listen to this broadcast, but then we don't make it tangible. And even you were saying that you haven't been doing your shows, you haven't been out on the road for a while. I think it's going to be so good for you because you need to connect with the people.
Yes, I agree.
My friend and I, truly, I have a friend of mine that's a Vietnam veteran in his 70s, and we went all the way to, we live in Ashland, Kentucky. We got up at 2 a.m., drove 6 hours to Illinois for the Trump rally this weekend on Saturday.
Wow.
And then stood for 11 hours straight because we were told the first 2,000 people in line would get into the hangar. And we knew we were going to get that way. And as we got through security, I'm looking at George saying, oh, I can't wait to sit down. And you get to the hangar and there were no seats. So there's the reality of we're going to be standing another 6 hours on concrete.
So what you're saying is this president is a liar. I'm sorry, just playing CNN for a second. Go ahead, tell a story.
Well, they could say it as much as they want. You know what? We were standing in line making fun of the Carbondale Solidarity Network, which was a socialist group that was coming to protest. They had to have their 11 a.m. pancake breakfast before they came to protest. And, you know, we were joking, well, do you think there were vegan and gluten-free options to go along with that?
Right.
But there were over 10,000 people there for the rally, and less than 75 people showed up to protest. There was not a piece of I've heard you say this about your functions when you've had the restoring functions. There was no garbage. You would never known there was 10,000 people there.
Yeah.
No one was complaining.
Yeah.
I kind of had to warm up to Trump myself, and I was intimidated to go to one of these things because I was afraid if I said one negative thing, I was going to be completely shouted down. No, people were so open about talking and you know, if someone had to go to the bathroom and their child stayed with us, I mean, you're in a group of 10,000 people. You trust strangers to watch your child while you run and do an errand and come back real quick. It was such a positive environment. And, you know, it's like the president just happened to show up. I'm so glad he's actually going to be in Huntington on Friday, which is 5 miles away from where I live. But I'm so glad I went to Illinois because I remember standing in line and seeing the headline break about the shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And we also went through the doubt of whether the president was going to show up or not. And this is after we'd gotten in the hangar and we'd been standing there for 2 hours. But we never gave up hope. And we all you know, we had jokes of, you know, conservatives, the one thing liberals can do better than us is chant. We can't chant. It's like we need classes or something.
Yeah, no, we suck at that. And I'm glad we suck at that. I'm really glad we suck at that.
But, you know, it was such a positive environment, and our legs were just killing us by the time that he got there. And George and I drove back that night. It was a 28-hour road trip that we took for this experience. And as exhausted as we were and as much as we were aching, George looks at me and says, he's doing one in Missouri later this week, isn't he? How far is that? Well, that one was just 6 hours. Missouri was going to be 8, but we were going to go until we found out that this one was going to happen right across the river on Friday. So fine, make it tangible. That's the best thing that I can say is go and meet these other people. 10,000 to 75. We're very quiet people, but you got to this rally, and there was just an energy that was there that you realize we can be, there's hope for society.
Yeah.
Because granted, I got up and went to Walmart the next morning, and people are cutting you off to get to the best parking spot. And you're like, well, yep, I'm home.
Allison, hang on the second. I want to get you a copy of my book. I signed it, and I'll send it out to you. Thank you so much for holding, and thanks for sharing that. It is, that is, maybe if, I don't, am I struggling today? Do you feel like I'm struggling today? Because I don't feel like I'm struggling today. I'm a little frustrated at...
Righteous indignation, I would say. Yeah.
I'm frustrated that we concentrate on all the wrong things. And I think that's kind of what she's saying here. These aren't the things we should be concentrating on. You know, the president being an anti-Semite. Geez, his daughter is Jewish. You know, how many Klan members are cool with that? I don't think any.
And relatively few.
Yeah, how many Nazis were like, oh, you know what? Yeah, okay, so my daughter's going to marry this Jewish guy, and she's going to become Jewish. That's great. That doesn't happen.
Again, when you're talking about American Jews, one of the main things they've asked the president for how many generations was to move the capital back to Jerusalem, and this is the guy that did it. I mean, he, you know, look, it's insane. It boils down to these ridiculous summaries of what a person believes. You're telling me you can't criticize someone on the left that you disagree with politically because they're Jewish, because then you get called an anti-Semite. In the same way, like, a liberal should be able to criticize without fear of being called a racist, Clarence Thomas. They should be able to say, I think he's wrong on the Constitution. They should absolutely be able to do that without being called racist. But this bizarre thing, and this is carried out today, not by, you know, Mother Jones in the Huffington Post where you'd expect it, but every mainstream media source asking question after question after question, what part of this? Give me a percentage. Tell me, please, how much of this is Donald Trump's fault?
So here's, let me do what Allison just said. Let's make it tangible. Here is Joe Lieberman on a very frustrating interview with CNN. Listen to this.
Well, it's a shocking moment. I mean, we view it all through our own experience. I have had a life as a Jewish American, which has been not only free of anti-Semitism, but I've had this opportunity to be elected senator from a state, Connecticut, where the Jewish population is about 2%. And then Al Gore gives me the chance to run for vice president, first Jewish American on a national ticket. I faced no anti-Semitism. Forgive me for going back to the end of the 2000 election. We actually got 500,000 more votes in the other ticket, which was a reflection in numbers that people weren't voting based on religion. So when something like this happens, it's shocking, and it changes that reality. But I believe the reality is that the American people are very fair-minded, not bigoted. And you saw it in the wholesome reaction of the neighbors who were not Jewish in Squirrel Hill, Pittsburgh, and in the elected officials there. It was very genuine.
And of course, this does not please CNN. This is not what they wanted out of Joe Lieberman. They didn't bring him on to say that he had a good experience as an American. They didn't bring him on to say positive things. They brought him on to clarify exactly what portion of this is Donald Trump's fault. Tell us so we don't have to say it. Say he's responsible so we can have plausible deniability that this is exactly what we believe. We don't want to come out and say it 5,000 times. We'll just hint to it. You say it, okay? Is essentially the way they lead into this next question. And again, he is not giving them what they want to hear. Listen.
Do you believe that there are those who perceive those to be anti-Semitic dog whistles? When you see the one of the closing ads of his campaign, George Soros, Janet Yellen, Lloyd Blankfein from Goldman Sachs, with dark, ominous pictures and talking about the money and the international banking.
Just a question, though, guys.
Is that something that sends a message?
Yeah, well, the first thing I want to say is that, in my opinion, this brutal murder in Pittsburgh really was committed by a hateful loner who was probably more stimulated by anti-Semitism in social media than by anything else going around him. He was against President Trump, and it's real. I was glad to see that this website is taking itself down for a while, and all the social media people have to ask whether they're becoming vehicles for this kind of hatred. But more generally, I think all of us have to, beginning with the president, Democratic and Republican leaders in Congress, people in the media, conventional media, and the more unconventional social media, have to ask ourselves, to what extent are we contributing to the division in our society? Charlie Dent and I have worked together in a group called No Labels, trying to overcome the way the parties have become like warring tribes. But this goes beyond that.
He just said tribe.
What would I say? When the president makes a constructive statement about unity, let's praise him for it and urge him to build on it and think about ways in which he can act so that no one can ever say he somehow was responsible for violence or hatred.
Again, that's the Joe Lieberman 47-minute response. But, I mean, you get the summary there. I mean, first of all, this guy was not pro-Trump. Not. I mean, he was viscerally anti-Trump in a way of, you know what I don't like about Donald Trump is he's too nice to Jews. That is essentially what the guy was saying on his social network over and over and over and over again. So he was not a pro-Trump guy that shot up this synagogue. And, you know, like, it's important to make that distinction. And how do you bring people together? The exact opposite of what CNN's trying to do in that clip. He does it in the nicest Joe Lieberman possible way, right? But what he's saying is what you're doing right now by trying to make this into a situation where it's Trump is blamed, what we should do is wrong. What we should do instead is when he says something that we think helps the environment, we should praise it. Sure, certainly, generally speaking, we have an issue with our discourse. I think almost everybody would agree with that. But when it comes to this shooting, it's not related.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.